This is Andrew Phipps, and I'm glad to be with you today on our Faith, Family, Freedom broadcast. Wherever you might be able to see the program, thank you. God bless you for being with us today. I hope that it might be a help, an encouragement, and we do these programs with you in mind. We're also on YouTube. We do a BBS radio TV podcast, which is a very large outlet, several times a week during the day, and then also on Tuesday nights at 9:05. We also do a podcast with Ed Henry, formerly of Fox News, once per week. In the coming interview, I'm going to be with a wonderful friend of mine, Jack Bimber. He teaches in the public schools English, and he's smart. His dad is a minister. He knows the Bible thoroughly. Let's see what he has to say about public education. I'm here with a dear friend that has been a friend of mine for so many years, Jack Bimber, the son of a preacher, but also an English teacher in a public school, and also one of the best Sunday school teachers that we have at our church, Liberty Baptist Church here in Muncie, Indiana. And Jack, you have a great understanding of the needs in education. We're talking particularly about public education. And I know this is just kind of off without a whole lot of preparation on your part, but what do you see as we think about public education today as what it might have been 20, 30, 50 years ago?
Well, Andrew, thanks for those kind words. Probably, Andrew, the biggest differences I see, and I started in 1988.
Right.
So it's quite a while ago. I've got about 35 years in. And things were still, I guess what you would say, still changing. And they still are changing now, but not as rapidly, because education has kind of gotten where it was intended to go from about the mid-60s until now. You take a look at the founding fathers and those who thought about public education. What they wanted was people who could take a look at issues, understand the founding documents, and then make decisions based on the information in those documents and who we actually are as a country. What we see now, I don't mean to cut you off, but what we see now is an activist education department which tends to run to the left and in some cases even communistic in the things that it espouses and what it pushes in the agenda. So instead now worrying about literacy, because if you look at your bigger cities where most of the people are being educated, literacy is at very low levels, historically low. Mathematics skills are at historically low levels. And charter schools are on the rise because people can see the initial prospects for education are not being met.
And we left Noah Webster.
Oh, we left Noah Webster a long, long time ago. And now we are not driven by education. We are driven by politicians who want to advance a leftist ideology. And in my opinion, and what I've seen, our education serves nothing more, public education that is, than to enslave people to a way of thinking so that they're dependent on government.
Yeah, diversity, inclusion, and equity. And somebody was telling me, they said equity, if it's applied in one level, has to be applied in all levels. And they said, we don't see very many like small Asian basketball players in the NBA. And the point was well taken with me.
Well, that's true. And to further, capitalize on that point, is the idea that whenever we talk about equity education, we're not talking about great outcomes for everyone. What educators talk about and what your social left talks about is bringing the top down to meet some kind of mythical middle part where everybody is relatively the same. what it would look like would be if you had $100 and I had none because you worked and I hadn't. The left comes along and says, well, Andrew, you have 50 extra dollars. Let's give that to Jack so you'll both have 50. But the issue is Andrew is the producer and I've produced nothing.
So mediocrity becomes the result.
Mediocrity, and worse than mediocrity, because what happens is those who aren't producing in the classroom or anywhere else, they learn that they have to do nothing in order to get by. And so it's worse than mediocrity. It produces great frustration with the people who should be at the top.
What about the pay system? Does that have anything to do with outcomes?
I don't think the pay system has one thing to do with outcomes. I don't think it has anything to do with it. Most teachers make as much or more than the average person in their community makes. But teachers are human, and if you say, hey, we'll give you more money for doing this job, of course we'll take it. We're like anybody else. But that's not the reason. 75 to 100 years ago, there were teachers who were committed. You graduated high school what year?
1960.
Did you have any good teachers?
I did. Wonderful.
How were they paid? Very well or not very well?
Well, according to the day, just fair, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Fairly.
Yeah. And we're getting paid better.
Yeah.
And we're not getting any better results. But that's because the results that the education department is after has really nothing to do with what you learned and what most people learned as they were growing up.
Well, the American Federation of Teachers, they think that everything can be solved with more money in another department, like the Department of Education, more bureaus. I heard a fellow say the other day, Jack, and it was a little humorous. He said he didn't think that there was any life on faraway planets, because had there been, we would have already sent them some government programs.
Well, that's probably true. That's probably true.
So are we discouraging the people that are coming in at the entry level from considering education?
I think we're beyond that. I think we are getting exactly who we've planned to get in education. Look, you'll always have your true believers and people who come in and do really good jobs, people who come from good families, people who come from some conservative backgrounds or who believe in the original mission of education to help others truly learn. But it seems to be the same in education as it is everywhere else. There is a shortage of people who really understand what education is about.
The universities helped with the teaching preparation, do you think, and getting teachers acclimated for the profession, getting preparatory instructions, teaching, schools like Ball State University was always considered a great teacher institution. But what I'm thinking about, Jack, is this. I think, too, there seems to be a thrust, and I think it's positive, maybe to emphasize the trades and the vocational. Does everybody need to read Silas Marner?
Well, I doubt that they need to read Silas Marner. I think what is happening with the vocational and the thrust towards the trades is good, except for this. A lot of times we have students who don't believe they can do anything academically, but it's probably because a lot of them have never really been pushed academically because of the mediocrity. There are some students who really have never had the opportunity to read a novel,
right?
Because the situation in the classrooms have been such that they're in places where students aren't required to read very much.
What about this concept? And we'll follow it up on another podcast or wherever. What about the idea that the students need to have also to be productive and to be contributing citizens that have a moral
inclination or orientation. It seems like that we're neglecting that, and we're pushing today a value system that's contrary to Americanism or our Christian heritage, our patriotism, good citizenry, people being responsible for himself or herself. Are we getting away from that?
We are getting away from that. And the most important thing you just said in your question was about espousing almost anti-patriotic messages, anti-moral messages. We could discuss with everyone the value of teaching morals, and that's fine. The issue is that when schools go into this business of pushing anti-Americanism, pushing leftist agendas, celebrating gay pride, things like that, you can tell that they've stepped away completely from pushing what the majority wants, and they are pushing an agenda that your higher levels of education want and that your Department of Education wants.
Well, John Dewey said, man doesn't have a soul. There is no God. And he became kind of the patriarch of what we would call progressivism in educational circles.
Well, and his vision that he had has come to fruition. You know, except for the fact we do have a soul, and our students are really wanting moral education. They ask questions. They want leadership. They want clarity. The problem is, are very, very many people available to give it to them?
Jack, you have added so much to the dialogue, to the narrative today. I want to, in the future somehow, if we can continue in the discussions, because you bring lucidity, you bring a freshness, you bring something to the narrative that I need, and I believe other people need, and I want to thank you for it.
Thank you, Andrew.
One of the things that you seem to enjoy is the particular song or hymn that we also share. It's part of our heritage, our background, and we're so glad today that we can have part of that as within the confines, the format we call it. I like the singing that we've heard over the years with the old-fashioned Chuck Wagon Gang, and I've known many of those members, and some, obviously, the older ones, the first generation, are gone. But also, after this song that I like, we're going to hear from an African-American leader in North Carolina who is also running for governor. He's a preacher, and I thank the Lord for that. And he's going to tell us something about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Let's see and enjoy these segments together.
The Chuck Wagon Gang is a 75-year-old institution in the field of gospel music. This group was founded by Dad Carter in 1936. Now, three generations later, the Chuck Wagon Gang has become the oldest grassroots mixed quartet that is still singing and recording gospel music. Many of these great old convention songs the group recorded at their start in 1936 were sung at tent revivals all across America, and they are still great today.
There's a mansion, now awaiting beyond high. Finished, and it's time for me to leave. When he calls me, I'll be glad to go.
that I think we ought to replace DEI with DEI. Y'all are confused, aren't you? Let me explain to you what I mean. There is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And then there's my version of DEI. And here's what my version of DEI is. It's something that America desperately needs to bring back. Three things that America desperately needs to bring back to its government, to its education, to its businesses, to its industry, to every corner. Three words that need to be brought back in this country. And those words are these: discipline, excellence, and intelligence. That is what needs to come back to America. And it needs to come back in a hurry, because America is in trouble. America is in trouble.
If you'd like to have any of our products, we do have a Faith, Family, and Freedom Handbook. We have some DVDs. We did one with Pastor Jim Scudder in Washington, D.C. a little over a year ago. It's called Can You Find God in D.C.? I think you will enjoy the beautiful programming that was done in the Jefferson and Lincoln Memorials and other places. If you want any of our products, just call us or get in touch with us, as would be indicated there on the screen.
Andrew Phipps has been part of the WHMB television family for decades now, and as the general manager of the station for the past 28 years, I've had the chance to get to know Andrew quite well. Needless to say, I was very excited when I heard Andrew had written a new book titled It's Always a Struggle, But. This new book sums up Andrew's life story written in a way that only Andrew can tell, from early survival and great loss to eventual success in many aspects of his life. Andrew Phipps, an award-winning educator, speaker, and broadcaster, takes readers on a personal journey. This journey shows how a second chance, along with unwavering faith and hard work, changed the course of his life and can change yours. Each page in Andrew Phipps' new book, It's Always a Struggle, But, brings valuable life lessons, homespun humor, inspiration, Christian principles, and a reminder to never lose sight of the transformational power of God in our daily lives. The book will remind you to be grateful for all things and to see the hand of God in all opportunities that surround us in every season of life. Remember, It's Always a Struggle, But, by Andrew Phipps.
To place your order for It's Always a Struggle, But, simply visit Andrew's website at phippsfaithfamilyfreedom.org. Order your copy today.
To the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Freedom and the dignity of the individual have been more available and assured here than in any other place on earth. The price for this freedom at times has been high. We have never been unwilling to pay that price. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. Each one of those markers is a monument to the kind of hero I spoke of earlier. Their lives ended in places called Belleau Wood, the Argonne, Omaha Beach, Salerno, and halfway around the world on Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Porkchop Hill, the Chosin Reservoir, and in 100 rice paddies and jungles of a place called Vietnam. Under one such marker lies a young man, Martin Treptow, who left his job in a small town barbershop in 1917 to go to France with the famed Rainbow Division. There on the Western Front, he was killed trying to carry a message between battalions under heavy artillery fire. We're told that on his body was found a diary. On the flyleaf, under the heading "My Pledge," he had written these words: "America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone." We must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Friends, I have thoroughly enjoyed myself today. I hope that you have. What a delight. What a wonderful blessing. It's a positive contribution, I hope, on my part, to try to come into your place of viewing and be a part of your day. Remember, we have a website, Phipps Faith Family Freedom. Go to that if you want to check us out. And we've been privileged to speak and have a good schedule and speak around the country. And for that, we're grateful. We feel it's very necessary. It's imperative in these days in which we find ourselves to try to be an encouragement to Christian patriots. And we're hoping that maybe we can do that within this program. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to be looking forward to being with you again at the next opportunity. But until that time, this is your friend, Andrew Phipps, saying, have a great day.